Welcome to the Human Flourishing Project. I'm your host, Alex Epstein. Today, I want to share with you one of the most powerful explanation techniques I've ever learned, which I call the opinion story. But first, I want to summarize where we are in the show so that those of you who are new will know where I'm coming from, and those of you who have been listening will get a review. So to start at the beginning, the Human Flourishing Project exists to solve the problem that I find most frustrating, but also most fascinating, which is that we as human beings lack reliable access to just about the most important thing in the world, which is the knowledge that we need to flourish. And by flourish, I mean to succeed in an integrated way, in a way that integrates everything that's possible to us in life, and in particular, material and mental success. And it's very frustrating to me that it's really hard in so many dimensions of human flourishing, like nutrition, psychology, relationships, even all kinds of political issues, that it's just so hard to get at, okay, what's really true here? What actually leads to human flourishing so that I can apply that to my own life and know how I do what I need to do to flourish and also do what I can do in the society to help others flourish and to have the right kind of government taking the right kind of action. So my theory about this problem is that the way to solve it is not to do what's conventionally done, which is to just seek out new claims to knowledge, like a new podcast or TED Talk or article or book. That on its own, that's just going to give us more and more claims to knowledge, and we already have plenty of those that are a mess. So what we really need to do is we really need to work on our knowledge systems. And by knowledge systems, I mean the processes by which we acquire knowledge and explain knowledge and apply knowledge. And if we can get really, really good at those, then we'll be in a position where, as consumers of knowledge, we know how to be really discerning and how to separate fact from fiction and superior experts from people who just claim to be experts. So if we can do that on the acquisition end, we're great. And then on the explanation end, if we can have a society where everybody who has real knowledge is a lot better at explaining things, and in particular explaining why they're right and that people who claim to have knowledge but don't are wrong. So far in the show, that's been the big focus, is how can we develop better systems for acquiring knowledge? How can we develop better systems for explaining knowledge, all in the name of human flourishing? And today I want to continue on the subject of explaining knowledge. In a future show, I'm going to discuss applying knowledge, but every time I sit down and think about what I want to cover, at least for the last several weeks, I've thought there's some really crucial point about explanation that I've really benefited from learning, and I think you would really benefit from. And so as long as that keeps happening, I'm going to keep covering these explanation topics because they're so valuable for us sharing our knowledge with others, but they're also valuable in us acquiring knowledge, because the more we understand about how to explain things really well, the more we can be discerning when we see other people explaining things to us, the more we can look for really good kinds of explanations. And in my experience, the better I am at finding good kinds of explanations, the better I am at finding really good experts. All right, so that's where we are. And then today, I want to talk about this technique that I call the opinion story. And to introduce you to this technique, I'm going to tell you the opinion story behind the opinion story. You're going to see opinion stories are this device for explaining just about anything, and in particular, issues related to human flourishing. And they're really valuable both for framing, which I've discussed in the past couple episodes, so how to set the starting structure of an explanation or a conversation so that everything else is set up for success. If you want to know more about that, listen to the last two episodes. But it's also really good for just once you've set out the right framework for explaining your opinion. So here's the opinion story behind the opinion story. And the origin of it was, for me at least, I haven't heard other people use this exact technique. I'm not claiming that I'm the first person to have discovered anything like this, but I definitely figured this out on my own in a certain way, and that's the way I'll share it with you. So the background was, I was having difficulty explaining to people what my favorite book was and why I thought it would be valuable to them. And my favorite book, I don't think I've mentioned it yet on this show, is the controversial book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. And Ayn Rand is a fascinating figure, and I'm sure I'll talk about her in depth in some future episode. My general view is that she is very misunderstood and caricatured and underappreciated. And in part because she's caricatured, people don't look at her actual ideas. But I think she's an enormous resource for thinking about human flourishing. But that's actually motivated me wanting to get people to read Atlas Shrugged, which was her most significant work, I think, which is a novel, but it's a very, very philosophical novel that actually introduces some ideas that I think are very important philosophically. And I read it when I was 18, and I really was impressed by the author, and I thought just the level she was on in terms of clarity was just higher than anything I had encountered to that point. And I wanted other people to read it. And for a decade or so, the way I would go about this is the way most people go about explaining most things, which is to declare them. So I would declare to people, hey, this is a great book. You need to read it. And I would give them a whole bunch of reasons. Like, it's got such a fascinating plot, and it's got inspiring characters, and it's got ideas that you've never thought of before, and it's just really entertaining. And when I would do that, when I would declare my opinion or my conclusion, I would get a lot of resistance. And I particularly noticed this must be about 10 years ago now, when I was at the LA Festival of Books, which is this huge, amazing book fair, and I got to sit at the table for the Ayn Rand Institute, which is an organization that, among other things, promotes that book, Atlas Shrugged, and encourages people to read it and actually gives a lot of free copies of it away to students. And so I got the opportunity to sit at their table and to talk to people who were potentially interested in reading that book. And I would use this declare approach, and it wouldn't work very well. And this was very frustrating to me. And so one day I just tried something that seemed random at the time, but I later understood that there was something really profound there. And that was, instead of declaring that it was a great book, when somebody came up and they were maybe looking at Atlas Shrugged, I would just ask, hey, have you read that? And they'd say yes or no. And I'd just say, oh, it's my favorite book. So instead of declaring my conclusion to somebody as something that they should agree with, I just told them that it was my conclusion. And then I would just elaborate a little bit, and the reasons don't particularly matter here, but say I would tell them, hey, when I was young, I really liked heroes, and my main heroes were in sports, which was great, but that didn't really help me that much in life. And in this book, this was the first time I'd ever read a story where there were heroes who were, they were like even cooler than sports heroes, but they were like real life heroes who had normal jobs. And it just really inspired me to think about my own life differently and to really want to reach my highest potential. So I don't remember exactly the version of the story I told, but the relevant thing is that instead of declaring my conclusion, I told them the story of how I reached my conclusion. And when I told the story of how I reached my conclusion, and I call this the opinion story, it had a totally different effect. Instead of breeding resistance, which people had when I would tell them that something was right and by implication that they should believe it, when I just told them the story of my own conclusion and I didn't say anything about whether they should believe it, they were curious and they'd say, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more. And that really stuck with me. And over time, what I've done is I've started using this not just for things like, oh, my favorite book, but for expressing any opinion. Instead of declaring the opinion, what I'll often choose to do is I'll tell the story of how I came to my own opinion. And I'll give you a more sophisticated version now. And this is the story that I tell when I talk to audiences about how I came to my controversial views about energy, particularly about fossil fuels. So I'll tell you that I can tell this story very quickly or in a long way. And in fact, almost whenever I talk about this issue now, I tell an opinion story. So for example, if you search Alex Epstein Google on YouTube, you'll see a talk I gave at Google on the moral case for fossil fuels, and you'll see the whole thing is an opinion story. And you'll see at the end, if you watch to the end or you just go to the end, a bunch of the people asking questions were very, very receptive to my argument at the end of it, even if they weren't at the beginning. And I think the reason is because I told it as a story instead of declaring it. So I'll give you just a short version of my fossil fuel story, my fossil fuel opinion story, and then I want to focus on what are the principles that make this work, and then what are the practices that you can use to come up with your own opinion story for any issue involving human flourishing or really anything else that you care about. So here's the opinion story about fossil fuels. And I just tell them the truth, the essential truth of how I came to that opinion. And so the basic background is that I grew up, and for the first 27 years of my life, I had virtually no interest in the subject of energy. And the only interest I had at all was I was told from a young age and in high school and college that the major form of energy that we use, fossil fuels, were a self-destructive addiction that was destroying the planet and that we should get off of. But I never really had too much interest in it. And then I was researching the issue, and I was doing a project on John D. Rockefeller, actually, and I started researching the history of energy, and I had this realization, which is that energy is the industry that powers every other industry. And what this means is that if we make good choices about energy and energy is abundant, affordable, reliable, and safe, then everything else in life gets better. And if we make bad choices, everything else gets worse. And this was fascinating to me, but it was also very concerning to me because I knew that on the one hand, the energy that we're getting from fossil fuels today was serving a really important role. And then B, I knew that I pretty quickly learned that 3 billion people don't even have much energy at all today. But then C, there were these claims that by using this form of energy, we're going to ruin our environment. And then that's going to be harmful to human flourishing. So I was very confused about this crucial and complex issue of energy. And I'll fast forward in the story, but I started studying it on my own. And I was then frustrated because what I found was that when I looked for information about it, I found that the discussion was very biased and sloppy. And what I mean by that is that I would notice that when I would hear opinions about or accounts of fossil fuels and nuclear, people focused almost all on negative things. And then when I would read accounts of solar and wind, people would focus on positive things. And I knew that there's no way I'm going to get to the right conclusion if we're looking at some things with a negative bias and some things with a positive bias. And I also saw that people tended to have an exaggerated tendency toward the negatives of fossil fuels, or they were at least really sloppy about how big they were. So people would say, oh, sea level rise is a huge problem, but they wouldn't be clear on, do we mean 20 feet in 100 years like Al Gore says, or 20 feet rather in 30 years like Al Gore says, or 2 feet in 100 years like the UN says. And so there was this tendency to just be really hysterical instead of precise. And I noticed the same thing in the other direction, where people would say, oh yeah, like solar and wind are taking over the world. And then I would look at the percentage and it'd be less than 2%. And then I'd think, okay, well, this is, people are exaggerating a lot. So I didn't know the answers, but I knew that I needed, like, there was no way I was going to get to the answer unless I could find the I could get the information in an even-handed and precise way. And then on top of that, I go into the focus of the biggest problem was the focus and energy wasn't really on human flourishing, which is my goal and my standard for evaluating things. The focus was on being green, on changing nature as little as possible, which for me, that's at best an aspect of human flourishing, and it often contradicts human flourishing. It's not the same thing. So I'm getting into kind of a long version of this, and sometimes that's appropriate, and sometimes longer is appropriate, sometimes shorter is appropriate. But as I'm telling this, the key thing is I found the method or the framework of the existing discussion to make it impossible for me to get this really crucial knowledge. So I decided that what I would do is I would apply my own framework and try to be as even-handed and precise and pro-human as possible. And I would apply that to the issue of fossil fuels. And when I did that, I was surprised to conclude that the positives of using fossil fuels were very underestimated by me and by others, and also the negatives for various reasons were very overestimated. So, and in a talk or something, I'll go into detail about this, but I'll be focused on, okay, here is how I experienced the thing. I'm not telling you what you need to think. And then I'd say, well, I was surprised to conclude that that the world should actually be using more fossil fuels in the next several decades, not less. So that's a kind of medium version of it. In the Google talk, I do longer. Sometimes I'll give you just the short way of doing it so you get the essence of it. I'll say something to the effect of, I got really interested in energy because I realized that this is the industry that powers everything else. And I was, with fossil fuels, I was afraid of like, what happens if we use them? Is that going to ruin our environment? But what happens if we don't use them? Is that going to make us really poor and ruin our economy? And so I investigated the issue on my own, and I really tried to look as careful as I could at both the positives and the negatives, not be biased like I saw a lot of people. And I concluded, wow, the positives way outweigh the negatives. And so I ended up becoming an advocate, which I didn't expect. So I'll often say something like that to an Uber driver or someone in a conversation. And what's fascinating is that the response is usually something like, wow, that's interesting. Tell me more. Even though what I've expressed is an incredibly controversial opinion. And if I had just declared the opinion, like saying, hey, the world needs more fossil fuels, not less, for these three reasons, if I just did that, I would almost certainly get resistance. So by telling the same opinion as a story versus declaring it to them, I get a totally different result. And I think you'll find this if you try to do the same thing. So that's what the opinion story is. The opinion story is the story of how you came to your opinion. Now, why is this so effective? And I think there are two reasons why it's so effective. One is it respects the starting context of the other person. And two, it respects the intellectual independence of the other person. So it respects the starting context of the other person, and it respects the intellectual independence of the other person. When I'm trying to explain something to somebody, whether it's in, I'm talking to an audience, or I'm writing, or I'm in a constructive conversation, I have to recognize that the starting context of the other person can be way, way different from where I'm coming from. And in episode 4, I talked about I called it the science of explanation. I talked about how my model of explanation is all about context bridging. So taking someone from their starting context to significantly closer to my context. And to do that effectively, I need to communicate throughout that, hey, I respect your context, which means that I recognize that you're coming from a different place than I am, at least to start, and that you have reasons for being in that place. Even if I disagree with those reasons, it's very important to communicate to you that I respect where you're starting from. So that's the starting context. And then related to that is I respect that if you're going to change, that you need to be really convinced of something on your own. I can't force you to do something. I can't declare it. That would be inappropriate because you have your starting context and you have your reasons for it. And if you're going to change, that change needs to be initiated by you. I can give you some maybe motivation or raw material, or I can expose you to something, but I have no business telling you what you should believe or how quickly. And one thing that I notice in conversations and in explanation is people will, they'll be confident that they're right. And let's say that they are right. They're still expecting the other person to immediately agree with them when either the person's starting context just has too many differences for the other person to agree with them, or where the other person just needs time. So there's this fundamental challenge of how, when we're explaining something, do we respect their starting context and their intellectual independence? And the opinion story is great because it does not tell the other person that they have to agree on any particular timetable. It just shares the story of how I came to agree with my present position. And thus, they can observe my story from a position of feeling respected and having intellectual independence, and then they can evaluate it for themselves and see if it fits them. And guess what? If I have a really, really good opinion story, if I tell a story that's really plausible, then they'll probably be motivated to learn more about it. They'll say, hey, that's an interesting story. Maybe I'll go through that same experience myself sometime. I can imagine myself going through that. But if I just declare to them and tell them, like, you should believe this, in effect, why don't you believe this right now? And I make it about them, and they're on the line, and they have to decide in the moment, do I agree or do I not agree? That's often just premature because of their context and because of their need to independently process things. So that's why the opinion story can be so powerful. And these principles of respecting the starting context and respecting the intellectual independence, these apply whether or not you're using an opinion story. The opinion story is just an amazing, amazing way of accomplishing those. So where we are so far is the opinion story is, instead of declaring our conclusion to people, we tell them the story of how we came to that conclusion. And then the reason that's effective is because by telling our own story without any definite implications for them or obligations by them to agree, we respect their starting context and we respect their intellectual independence, and that gives them the best possible chance, or at least a great chance, at understanding our argument. And one reason I like this is that I always am looking for ways of explaining things that give the best arguments the best chance to win. And I think the opinion story is that. So now let's talk about how do you develop your own opinion story? Because just like a comedian develops their material, so for issues that you think are important, that you're right about, it's incredibly valuable to develop opinion stories, to develop specific ones that you use, and then to develop the skill. So I'm going to give you some guidelines for opinion stories that I've observed over the years. Now, the highest level guideline of the opinion story is that, in essence, what you're doing in the opinion story, in telling the story of your opinion, is it's a story about you applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a certain conclusion. So all three of those are important. It's a story of you applying a certain framework, that's one, to the facts, that's two, to arrive at a conclusion, that's three. And it's very important that all three of these happen. And if you noticed in my energy or fossil fuel story, I talked about my framework, both how I found the existing discussion to be biased and sloppy and anti-human. That was important, but most important is that I decided deliberately to go about this in an even-handed and precise and pro-human way. So if you've listened to the past couple episodes, you might see some integration here, because in the last episode I talked about framing in conversation, how you can frame a constructive conversation, and how in any conversation you should think about what key things do I want to frame, what I call them framing premises, what do I want to establish. So for instance, one of them was, I want to establish that we should look at the full context of things, be even-handed and precise. And then another thing I might want to establish is a common goal, like human flourishing is our goal. And another thing I might want to establish is, here are some, we need to look carefully at our choices. And I talked about don't confuse a choice with a fantasy. To have a constructive conversation, we need to be talking about real choices, and we need to have all the choices on the table. So those are three types of things that can be good in a conversation. And last week I talked about a big way to establish those as frameworks is just to ask the other people if they agree that we should proceed that way. So for example, do you agree that we should be as even-handed as possible? Do you agree that we should be as precise as possible? And that can be really effective. But sometimes when we ask questions that way, when we ask any kind of question, there is the real possibility of putting the other person on the defensive. We definitely do not want to proceed in a way that's making them uncomfortable, where they feel like they're getting trapped, where they feel like you're manipulating them. And so sometimes it works to ask the framing questions. But what basically always works, if you want to do it, is instead of asking the framing questions at the outset, one thing you can do, if they'll let you express your opinion, and there's a lot involved there, but if they're interested in your opinion, if you get them interested, then just frame the discussion as part of your opinion story. So say, hey, when I looked at this, I really wanted to look carefully at all the pros and cons. Hey, when I looked at this, I wanted to really look at, okay, what are our real options versus fantasies? And if you notice, that's what I did in my fossil fuel story. And with any good opinion story, you should be talking about, in some way or another, talk about the framework that you use to come to your opinion. Because if you just talk about the facts without talking about the framework, then they have no reason to believe that you're processing the facts in a good fashion. But if you start out and you say, hey, look, this was my process, this is my framework, and then you get to, and when I looked at the facts, here's how I found them, and then I came to this conclusion, I think you'll find that's incredibly effective. So at a high level, the opinion story is a story about you applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a conclusion. So if you remember anything about opinion stories in constructing your own, make sure that you check those boxes. Now, you can tell opinion stories that aren't as effective there, but that are not that deliberate and you don't include framework. And sometimes I might do that if it's something like my favorite book. But if you really want to explain something well, part of a good explanation is the framework that you're using. So even if you feel like you can get something over on people just because people like stories, it's really important to give the framing and then the facts and then the conclusion. Now, here are a couple of other guidelines. The opinion story should include you being uncertain about the right answer. Remember, it's the story of how you came to your opinion. So when I talk about fossil fuels, I talk about the truth, which is where I was confused about things. And it's going to be important if someone else is going to grasp your explanation and you talk about where you were before, that can be helpful in relating to them. Now, I should say this is another requirement, is that even though telling your story helps, and particularly expressing your uncertainty about the beginning is helpful to somebody in grasping your conclusion, It should be all about you. It's just a story about you. In the opinion story, it's toxic to compare yourself to others in the other way or to tell them, hey, I was once in your shoes. Anything like that, that is toxic, because that's the opposite of respect for intellectual independence, because it's basically saying, hey, I know that you're wrong. And so let me just tell you the story of how I was once a wrong person like you. And young people certainly hate this when older people do it, but and they hate it for good reasons. It's completely condescending, and it's not a rational explanation. Even if you are right, it's not a good explanation unless you give someone the context that they need. So anything that you do that doesn't respect their starting context or that doesn't respect their intellectual independence, that is a bad explanation, no matter how right you are. And if you're right, then you're really doing yourself a disservice. And one thing that's frustrating about the world is that people who are right don't explain themselves properly. And that's part of the reason why it's so hard for us to know who is right. So there's the story includes you being uncertain about the right answer. That was point one. Point two is it's all about you, not comparing yourself to them. And then the highest level thing is the framework. You're applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a conclusion. Another one is that the story should be true. So don't make up something. Now you can take the essential of it. So you don't want to go into a whole bunch of unnecessary detail, but it should be true. People in persuasion often just have this tendency to think, okay, well, by default, I'm not going to think much about what's true. And that has all kinds of problems, including people can just grasp, oh, there's something inauthentic about you. And then they're really not going to trust you. And then that's a disservice to the truth if you, in fact, know the truth about an issue. And then the final thing is that the conclusion you draw in the opinion story needs to be rational and therefore relatable. So it's you applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a conclusion. Sometimes when people tell opinion stories or when I teach this in workshops, sometimes they'll tell a story about how they came to a conclusion, but the conclusion isn't rational or relatable. So let's say somebody had a negative opinion about oil and they had a more positive opinion, but the reason they'll give is, well, and I've really heard things like this. You know, when I was young, I was against oil, and then I met a really nice person who worked in the oil industry, and he did really nice things for my family. Like, that is not a reason to change your view of oil as such. It might be a reason to investigate it a little bit if somebody who's involved in it is a nice guy, but that's not a rational conclusion, and therefore it's not relatable. So again, if you keep this in mind, you are applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a conclusion, and that's your story, then the story will be very, very relatable. So to recap everything, the subject today is the opinion story, which is the story of how you came to your opinion, and specifically you applying a certain framework to the facts to arrive at a conclusion. The reason this is so effective is that you are in expressing your conclusion this way and your explanation, you're completely respecting the starting context and intellectual independence of the other person. And it's just, those are the two big things. That's what it is. That's why it's effective. And then some of the guidelines I gave, in addition to the high-level guidelines, starting with being uncertain about the right answer, making it about you, not having implications for them, making sure it's true, and making sure the conclusion you draw is rational, and therefore relatable. So as an exercise, I think there's a fairly obvious exercise here, which I hope you do on the Facebook page at facebook.com/humanflourishingproject, which is share your own opinion story. And I've been a little bit lax in getting to the comments the last several weeks, which I apologize for. My number one priority with this show is just to create good content every week. So that sometimes is all that I can do. But this week in particular, I really want to read opinion stories. So pick an issue where you want to share your opinion, where you think you have a really important opinion that can be hard to explain to people, and then come up with an opinion story and share it. And I'll try to comment on at least some of them. Now, if you have an organization where you think that either constructive conversation in general or opinion stories in particular where that would be valuable and you do high-level events, feel free to email me at alex@alexepstein.com if you want to hold a workshop on constructive conversation or opinion stories or any other aspect of explanation, and we can definitely talk about that. Also email me at alex@alexepstein.com if you have any questions or comments about this episode or about the Human Flourishing Project in general. And if you found this episode intriguing, definitely share it with friends, encourage them to join the discussion on our Facebook page, and encourage them to sign up at humanflourishingproject.com for our email list so that you can get notified every Friday about the aspect of human flourishing or the knowledge system or process for human flourishing that we're covering in the current week's episode. So this was episode 6, all about the power of the opinion story. I hope you enjoyed it. I will talk to you next week. Until then, I'm Alex Epstein, and this has been the Human Flourishing Project.